Hi, I'm Ben Trefney, news director here at KALW, and I want to invite you to become a member of KALW. We are 70% listener supported, so as you listen to this, please make sure to go to the Donate Now button at KALW.org. Thanks.
KALW.
It's okay to wake up feeling bad. It's okay to feel like, oh, I failed, to feel down.
Oakland artist Fantastic Negrito has a new album out and is using his Black Roots sound to address mental health.
They thought it was all blues and so sad. No, we were trying to heal. She said it sounded sad to them. That was medicine. That's good. You know, that's making you feel better.
He tells us how farming has been therapeutic for him. Then one of our incarcerated producers was released from prison early and into a strange new world.
There's these technologies I've never seen. And I couldn't imagine, like, we have one guy here that did 20 years. Can you imagine doing 20 years, no internet, and you go out into a world that's only online right now?
A new story from the Uncuffed podcast team. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Oakland's Fantastic Negrito has gone from singing in BART stations to performing on stages around the world. He was the first NPR Tiny Desk winner and has since earned 2 Grammys. Fantastic Negrito's new album is called Have You Lost Your Mind Yet? It's his 3rd full-length album and first to top the Billboard Blues charts. KALW's Janae Darden spoke to Fantastic Negrito about how his sound has evolved, his thoughts on mental health, and why he's spending his time offstage farming. And a quick note, always consult your doctor if you have questions about mental health treatments.
Okay, I gotta ask you, so have you lost your mind yet?
Absolutely, and you know what? It's okay. Basically, I was writing about, you know, people around me who are just, I felt like suffering from what I call, you know, mental health problems and that were undiagnosed. They're perfectly functioning people, but I really wanted to write about that because I was like, hey, you know what? It's okay. It's okay to wake up feeling bad. It's okay to feel like you can't go on. It's okay to feel like, oh, I've failed. It's okay to feel down. And we don't have to medicate ourselves to death just because, you know, we're going through something a little bit heavy. It's okay. There's another side. The sun does not always shine, but you will be sunburned.
I'm a mental health advocate before I even started.
Cool.
Yeah, before I started working at KALW. And I've always been open about living with depression and anxiety. So I appreciate that you putting that out there. And other guests I've talked to in the past, especially brothers, as far as sometimes that's a stigma in our community. And I think too, with a lot of men just feel uncomfortable about opening up about mental health.
Well, you know, men, we are programmed not to open up about a lot of things, and which is why I teamed up with E-40 to do Searching for Captain Save-A-Ho, a song, I'm the Whore. You know, and I'm the dude that goes around the world, a good looking, tall drink of water, having my way with anybody I want to have my way with. But when a female band member was to do the thing, like we all frowned on her. I was like, oh, shoot, she's hoeing. And I remember, you know, just seeing that double standard, and I really wanted to write about it, and I love E-40. And so I told him, I'm like, you know, I remember, I want to be saved. I remember that.
Saved,
yeah. I was like, I want to flip it around. He loved it. I'm just like, because we're now grown-ass men, village elders, and, you know, we can now communicate and open up and help each other. More of that mental health issue.
No, when I saw that song, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, no, Captain Save-A-Ho, he's evolved, he's grown up, and now he's helping, and then I'm searching for him. I think when even those double standards, sexism, racism, all those things, they really hurt the perpetrator. You know, when I project that type of energy upon people, upon women, it's damaging to me because I'm not getting all the power that I can get out of my sisters and aunties and grandmothers. Inside a cage and it won't be free. Still searching for
Captain Save-A-Ho from Oakland, California, Berkeley. And I know your grandmother, I believe, inspired you. to start a garden, or excuse me, a farm. I want to ask you about your farm.
It's my farm.
Revolution Plantation.
Revolution Plantation. It's on a quarter of an acre. One day I was in, and again, that's more of how do we cope with our mental anguish, our mental stress, especially for African Americans. Hey, we need to confront the thing that traumatized us, soil. We need to get back with soil, because we look at soil, we like, I'll be back. I'll be at Taco Bell. You know?
Right, because we're thinking about picking cotton.
We're thinking about agriculture, and like that has a very negative connotation. But what I always say is like, hey, if you want to get, speaking, because this is all mental health, Have You Lost Your Mind yet, the album, you want to get past, you know, your obstacles, go confront your source of trauma.
So what does gardening or farming help you for you personally, especially right now, because you're not touring?
Not touring.
What purpose has that served for you now?
Watching and nurturing something and, you know, teaching your children that, it's such a therapeutic way to live when you can live for others.
You know, I was interviewing an elder, and she said, if we don't respect the earth, then how can we respect ourselves?
100%. I have that same philosophy, but I use it musically, because I consider my music Black roots music. People have all kinds of, you know, oh my God, look at your music. It's like, it feels like blues, but it's not really blues. And it's this soul music, but it's too much rock in it. Wait a minute, is that rock music? But it feels like it's a little too soulful. It's a little too Black to me. Man, I hadn't heard it all. So number one, I call my music Black roots music. And I say, if we respect our ancestors, they will feed us. And that's the story of Fantastic Negrito. All I did was go hit the streets with a guitar and start playing music that came from this amazing, powerful, impactful culture of Black music. I call Black roots, I just picked from the garden. Look, I go to Switzerland, they got a jazz festival. I got to Norway, they got a soul festival.
So you see the seeds we planted and how they've grown.
Oh my God, of course. My grandma said, you know, white folks thought we were sad. We weren't sad. We were healing. They thought it was all blues and so sad. No, we were trying to heal. She said it sounded sad to them. That was medicine. That's good. You know, that's making you feel better. And that's really, I take so many powerful lessons from my grandmother. She inspired me farming, because I was in the South one day and when it was hot summers talking to her. I'm like, Grandma. And I was taping her. What did y'all do about Jim Crow and segregation? I was waiting for this horrible answer. My grandma said, honey, we really didn't have to deal with these racist white folks, because your great-grandfather, Benjamin Brown, he got together with other folks and we bought land and we had our own livestock. That's been, to me, the story of how I've made these albums, you know, walking into the Grammys with no record label. I think I'm the first artist to ever do it. Because Chance the Rapper did, but my award was first that evening. So I'm the first. Thank you.
You've talked about being middle-aged.
I'm middle-aged.
And saying that there's freedom in growing older.
You see this scarf and this hat? It's called freedom.
I see it.
You know, I'm Look free to wear it. I don't want to fit into someone's repressed fantasy of how they see the world. So I love me. It's just powerful to just get to know yourself, and then when you get to know yourself, man, embrace and celebrate who you are, because there's only one you in the damn world. Listen, if I could take my old self and go on the street and take nothing with an acoustic guitar, and hey, my guitar was just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for In the Pines.
I was going to ask you about that. How did you feel about that?
I feel like exactly what I'm saying now. Like, you know what? We will accomplish everything. Everything that we imagine, it can happen. You know, we just, no team, no dream. We have to build the community around us to help us empower our vision.
You talked about fashion, and somebody that you collaborate with who's very, has their own very unique, awesome style of fashion, are Taking the Bangas. And you filmed that video in Oakland, by the lake in downtown Oakland. What was it like working with them, your fellow Tiny Desk Award winner?
Well, yeah, I thought to myself, like, wow, when they won, I was like, damn, I'm scared. I'm like, that's scary. That's scary talent. You know, I don't know, for as a writer, maybe you may, you ever be like, oh no. So Tank,
you're like, they on another level.
Another level. And I was just like really happy and thrilled. So I talked to her about doing something. And, you know, I think I probably, she's probably like, this weirdo who won the first Tiny Desk, man, he's strange. You know, but after we talked a little bit, and I remember her telling me, man, you're not so weird, actually. And she actually said that. Don't get mad at me, Tank.
She did.
And then I sent her, I'm so happy I cried. And she was like, oh, yeah, we can do this. And true to form, that song was again about mental health. What came to mind when I was writing it was this kid had just died named Juice WRLD. And I thought, why don't I take I'm So Happy I Cry and flip it? Like, I'm not tears of joy. Like, I'm so happy sitting up here with $1 million stack, jewelry, but I'm singing about depression. And I'm medicating, I'm medicating. I'm like, there's something very sick about that mentally. And I feel like it's killing our, you know, kids who are, they're 20, they're kids to me, they're babies.
Yeah.
I really wanted to, you know, reverse that metaphor.
I'm missing you perform live because you, when you get on stage, it's like, is that somebody else?
Yeah, it's actually
is that somebody else?
Yeah.
When you get on stage?
Yeah, I'm like, that dude, you turn him on, then you'd want to turn him off. When I get to these big festivals in the world, I know we're going to be the best because of the vibrations that I can tap into. And it doesn't make me great. It makes my predecessors and my ancestors were great. And with them, I can fly. Have you lost your mind yet
to get free? That was Fantastic Negrito speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. His new album is called Have You Lost Your Mind Yet? Find more information about it at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now we're bringing you the latest episode of Uncuffed, which is usually recorded and produced inside California prisons. Unfortunately, the COVID lockdown has made that impossible so far. But we do have some good news. One of our founding producers at Solano State Prison was recently released as part of California's effort to try and make more space inside prisons during the COVID pandemic. Some listeners may remember Joe Kirk. He's done a lot of interviews for Uncuffed over the past couple of years, and this is him on the guitar. A few weeks after he was released, he spoke with Andrew Stelzer, one of the KALW editors that taught him radio and edited his stories inside Solano. This interview was recorded on August 9th.
I think I probably last saw you either the very end of 2019 or early 2020. You were still in Solano, so that's what the last time we saw each other. And so then what happened after then? I think you got transferred out before COVID was on the scene.
I got transferred out before COVID. The yard was just too much to handle. There's a lot of... I guess so you can say in the general population yards in California, there's a lot of racial politics where they segregate everybody. And it just being because I was the race of white, I fell into the category of white. But what that does is it brings forth a white supremacist thing on the yards, which is not good. And even though I didn't have those beliefs, all the other gang members on the yard were basically, you don't have a choice since you're here, you're one of us, you know, type thing. So they got me out in like 3 days and got me on an emergency transfer down to CRC. I didn't even get on a bus. They put me in a little van and actually drove me down there.
And what's CRC?
CRC is California Rehabilitation Center in Norco, California, which is in Riverside County.
And that's where you were as news started being broadcast about COVID. What were your thoughts? What were you hearing? And what was sort of the reaction at that facility?
Well, the first thing was all the inmates started watching the TV every day more and more, you know, even ones that didn't, because they were interested in this virus that was breaking out. And then everybody started to get real paranoid. Guys started to wear masks. But then at first, the officers were telling them to take it off because they couldn't identify them. But then it turned to real quick. It turned into, if you don't have a mask on, you can lose time. And then I was in an 80-man dorm where we're, you know, 2 feet apart from each other. If one guy gets sick, everybody gets sick. And in the bathroom, they were doing things like giving us just a bar of soap and no paper towels to wash our hands. And I even started to feel sick. I started to, you know that tingly feeling you get in the back of your nose when you, you're getting a cold? I started to get that feeling, but it started to travel down my lungs. And I was like, oh, this isn't good. But really, like, my symptoms got no worse than that. I got a little achy. That was it.
Around when was this? What month?
Oh, man. Let's see. Really bad with dates. I'm saying March.
Okay, during the first few weeks of the outbreak.
Yeah, the first few weeks. All of a sudden, they come in. They come in one day and say, attention in the dorm. They said, everybody doesn't have a choice. You're getting shipped out of the prison. Everybody's freaking out. And they started taking guys and pulling buses up onto the yard, throwing their property in a box without even inventorying it and putting a name on it and shipping them out or whatever. They didn't test anybody, nothing. You know, it was just see you later. And guys were sick.
Where did you end up and what was that like?
I ended up going to California Men's Colony. I actually was glad that I ended up at CMC because it's in San Luis Obispo, which was like in the summertime, it's like 75 degrees, you know?
And at this point, you said you had had some symptoms. Had you tested positive for COVID?
I didn't. They didn't test me until they got me to CMC. And then when they did, they threw me in an isolation cell. Nothing to look at, no books, no nothing. And I was in there for 2 weeks with nothing to do. It was the most boring time I ever had in my life.
So then when you got out of isolation, did you get tested again?
No, I got thrown straight onto the yard.
And when did word start to get around that the governor of the state might be letting people out to avoid overcrowding?
They put out a list. It said if nonviolent, but you couldn't be a 290, which is a sex offender. You couldn't have any violence whatsoever. There were certain stipulations. I can't remember them all. And I fit the criteria to go home. And my counselor let me know that, you're getting released. My out date was August 25th, and I got released on July 24th. So I got out about a month early.
So what was the release process like?
5 days before you go home, they call you to a tent that they have in the facility. And in the tent is a nurse in a hazmat suit that does the COVID test for you. Determining whether or not you test positive or not, they release you into the public.
So on the one hand, this is a moment, the moment of your release. I'm sure you've been waiting for and maybe even dreaming about for several years, freedom. But it also comes at this really strange time where people on the outside can't interact with each other. Whole industries are shut down. Jobs are scarce. So what is it like being so quote unquote free in this world that right now has a lot of restrictions we've never had before?
It's actually really scary because one of the things is being from Chicago, I don't have a California ID. I've never had one. And there's a huge process I have to go through to get one. The birth certificate, all that and everything else. And all a social security card. And all those places are closed down. And then I need an ID to get a job. Or a social security card too. And so if I don't have an ID or a social security card, how can I get a job or be a taxpayer? I know I just got out of prison. So I'm going to have to work a low-end job. which, you know, like there are none, you know, like, I mean, there is a little hope. I've heard Amazon's hiring everybody right now, but, my only option is right now is to maybe hopefully, I just found out the other day you can collect unemployment if you haven't had a job because of coronavirus, but I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air about that. And the relief from the government, you know, but that's only $1,200. That's only going to go so far. So I'm really concerned about housing and all that. And, you know, it's just really, it's intense, you know, and stressful. This does seem kind of crazy, though, but my counselor here raised a point where because I'm nonviolent, because of COVID, I signed paperwork the other day saying I can get off of parole in 6 months if I don't have a violation. My counselor said, are you crazy? I know it sounds crazy to want to stay on parole, but if you stay on parole, you can still get funding, you know? But yeah, no, it seems like a insanity to be like, yeah, I want to stay on parole, you know? I had a single room for the longest time when I first got here, but I got doubled up because they're going to dump a bunch of people out of prison. And so there's going to be a lot of guys in the same shoes.
What do you think people should know about what's going on both inside the prisons right now and about the thousands of people being released and what we as a society, people listening to this, might be able to do to make things somewhat better?
Yeah, you know, they need to have better reentry programs where with things like this happen, you can still get everything that you need, ID, a job, resources. I'm even a millennial and I got out 5 years later and there's these technologies I've never seen. And I couldn't imagine, like, we have one guy here that did 20 years. Can you imagine doing 20 years, no internet, and you go out into a world that's only online right now, you know? I do know one thing though, is that there's a lot of guys getting released, but there's a lot of guys that fall under like special circumstances and they're not getting released, or there's like lifers and things like that. And there's guys that have been in there for 20, 30 years that they're, you know, the most docile programming people doing groups every day, AA, you know, and they just don't get the chance because they have certain special circumstances or something. But it shouldn't be just like the low end drug dealers that get let out of prison. It should be some other people that get a chance too.
That was Joe Kirk, one of the founding members of Uncuffed at Solano State Prison, who was recently released after serving 5 years. He was talking with KLW editor Andrew Stelzer. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. This interview was not reviewed by CDCR. To hear more of it, subscribe to Uncuffed in any podcast player. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.